Do you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
I really didn't expect to do this until yesterday. I don't mean the show. I mean the first segment. The following thing happened. A few days ago, you know, you ever get an email that's like it's a spam, but it says that it's from somebody you know. Well, I got one of those, and the name was one of my former clients, a guy I really particularly liked. His name is Jerry Glynn. And so I say, it's been a few years. I go, what the hell? I wonder what the guy's doing. So I pick up the phone, and I call him, and he's actually not unhappy to hear from me. And so we have a nice little chat, and he lives in Kansas City. And he happens to mention that, of all things, he's going to be coming to Orinda to see family for the holidays. I say, hey, what the hell? When you're in town, why don't you come by? I live in Oakland, 5 minutes from Orinda. Come by, we'll have coffee. And I see the guy, and he's 100 pounds thinner than he was. And I ask him, during the coffee, I say, how the hell did you lose the weight? And his answer made me say, oh, my God, my listeners need to hear this. So, Jerry Glynn, welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
Thanks, Marty. I appreciate the opportunity to be here with you today. So to answer the question, I have to back up a little bit and talk about my circumstance some years ago. I have been a very successful financial services technology executive.
CIO, CTO kind of guy.
CIO,
at Charles Schwab.
I was at Schwab and then also with American Century Investments in Kansas City, both great companies and contributed a lot, learned a lot. But by 2007, I found myself in a place that many folks in mid to late career find themselves, in my case, mid-career. I was laid off from a position just as the economy was turning. And all through my career, I'd had no problem finding great opportunity after great opportunity. But this begins for me a time of extreme challenge. And so I was unable to find another position. In fact, the metaphor that I use is after a while, it became like standing in front of a solid brick wall with no door, and day after day saying, please put a door here and open. Please put a door here and open. And so it feels like the impossible. It feels like it's crazy to do day after day. And as many people do, I succumbed to the negative effects. You know, I began to doubt myself. I began to gain weight. I just wasn't taking care of myself, and I sort of had lost direction. So, while I was still working to find employment, I realized that there were other fundamental changes that needed to happen. And for me, this meant first on the spiritual side, I really worked to find my compass of true north. So how should I live every day? What should I be focused on? And in our day-to-day world, we get so caught up in the material side of things, the achievement side of things, the things that society tells us are important that, as happens with many, it happened with me that I really kind of lost my sense of purpose and my sense of self at a certain level. So I began to explore, in my case, Christian scriptures, the Bible, and began to find ways that were to live and to take care of ourselves and how to do that. And it meant actually a turning away from just myself and my own situation and starting to focus outside and to think about others and to think about how really we're supposed to take care of ourselves, respect ourselves. So this led to a day-by-day transformation for me, and not an easy path. We're talking about this here in a matter of minutes, but this unfolded over several years. But for me, it meant then going day-by-day to learn how to make a difference in my life, how to find my direction, And it helped me to then move away from solely focusing on the job search and thinking about those things around me that validate me, and really thinking about the greater purpose and the greater way I can contribute. So along the way, there was a physical and a spiritual transformation that took place, and you've already mentioned the physical transformation. So for me, it meant a change in my thinking patterns, how I related to others, trying to be grateful for even the smallest of things, and to reset my frame of reference about what success was and what might happen.
And how did that actually enhance your probability of getting a job?
Well, interestingly, I feel that it allowed me to respond differently with others and to not seem like a desperate job seeker or somebody who had lost confidence in themselves. It was rather people could see these transformations taking place on all levels, and they were drawn in by that. They were interested in that.
And there was one other thing you did, again, that never in a million years would I have, as a career counselor, have recommended it to you, and yet it proved key to your being more successful in your job search and in your job. Tell us about that.
Yes, and this fits in an interesting way. For me, it makes total sense, but I think we'll have to talk about it for a minute. But I became drawn to some of the principles, values, and sort of the training, the mental training particularly, around what some of our special forces do.
And special forces in the military.
In the military, yes. And I'm not really talking about the martial side of it whatsoever. I'm talking about the skills that get developed for mental toughness and emotional resiliency. And so one of the principles I'll just speak to for a moment is smaller goal setting, micro goal setting. So in stressful situations, challenging situations, you're really looking to set a goal that is not too far away. A pointy example is from my running. So if I was running and it was difficult for me to get back into running and to go greater distances and to pick up my speed. So in running, I would feel like I was done, but realized if I just focused another 100 yards ahead on something and said, let's just try to get to that, that after a while you would actually make that goal, and then you'd set another, and you'd make that goal, and you'd set another. So you work through a difficult situation.
And you didn't do that just in running, but you did. You were a former Marine, but you were not a SEAL or anything.
No.
But you did a kind of a boot camp for people mainly in their 30s and 40s that really blew me away. Tell us about that.
Well, I did become involved with, I found a book that talked about these principles, and I began to follow it on my own and eventually went to the program at one level. I will say there are training programs that this group conducts for people who are going to be going in the special forces. That's not me. But it is the case that they teach you how you're capable of so much more than you think you are. And I'd been following those principles and decided to go to a small training camp.
What's it called? What's that called?
It's called SEALFIT, SEALFIT.com. You can find out more about it.
And tell us what was the most important moment or activity within that SEAL camp that may be instructive for all of us, or that made a big difference for you in terms of regaining your confidence or whatever?
It was the working together as a team. One of the things that ties back in with something I mentioned earlier, the thinking outside of yourself. It turns out that when you turn in and you just focus on yourself and it's a difficult situation, that things somehow remain miserable or remain or even become worse. And one of the things that brings you out is to focus on teammates, to focus on others who are trying to achieve a similar objective, and to think about trying to support that objective with the others, trying to get into the other person's shoes and try to feel what they're going through and help them with
that. And an example, you told me there was a 1,500-pound super tractor truck tire that a small team of you had to move, and that was an example of that teamwork thing.
Exactly. So trying to lift extreme weight or move large volumes of weight in a hurry, perhaps, would be examples. And there are other team exercises that seem impossible on the face of it that you can actually do.
As I listen to this, I hear a couple of important things. You know, it seems like a paradox, but here, you know, you are in your most vulnerable. You're a man who traditionally was a provider, a high achiever, a vice presidential and senior vice president level executive in prestigious companies, and now you're unemployed and perceived to be unemployable, when the natural tendency would be to look inward and blame yourself and work harder or do whatever. But what ended up being transformational for you was to move outside of yourself. And whether it is with, you know, your church and giving to the church or the people, the community, or in this teamwork thing and then in the SEAL thing, it ended up paradoxically being turning outside yourself. Is that correct, first of all?
That's absolutely correct, yes. Yeah. It's reframing in new ways and thinking about how, you know, there's a broader context. And it means thinking definitely differently. I mean, you have to let go of certain things. You have to decide what's important. So it does mean change, and change is not easy. But it is quite possible when you think of it the way you described.
What have you changed about yourself?
I've changed, the physical side of it we talked about.
How about at work? Let's tell people you've got a new job now. Tell me about current job. You got another one in the offing. Tell us what you can about your career success. And this is not just a work in progress. This is a success story.
Right. I'm agreeing with that. So along the way, I began to find new opportunities. And the amazing thing is I gave you that sort of metaphor of the door and the wall. On one occasion, out of the blue, came an opportunity from a longtime colleague, and I'd lost touch and had no expectation of anything, but an opportunity to work with the UK government and Nigerian government, helping to develop technology for their power infrastructure, presented itself. So for a couple of years, I worked on a project in Nigeria. And then I found through some of my connections that I had built that I had some consulting engagements I could do as a interim CIO, if you will, advising the CEO of several companies. So that's what I did for a while, and I'm still working in that position in Kansas. But over the last 3 months, have found a really great opportunity in financial technology with a company here in Southern California. So I'm working as the chief product officer.
How'd you find this one is in California? How'd you get that one? The other two were networking. I'm curious what worked for you.
Well, this was also networking.
But
interestingly, this reminded me that these things don't just happen immediately. This was a long-time network that eventually presented an opportunity.
I want to stress something with you, my dear listeners. There's always a tendency for all of us to look for a magic pill, a technical fix, or whatever. So Jerry came to me, and I gave him all the tricks in the world about revising his resume and networking and all the rest of it. But in the end, none of that was really central. And at the risk of putting down me and my profession, really it ended up coming down to a more internal thing where he was able to find the fuel to move forward from something having nothing to do with what a career counselor would say. It came from his spirituality. And it came from back to his roots in the military, which reminded him of some of the good practices for achieving excellence. Is that a fair statement?
That's well said.
Okay. So now I want to give you, my dear listeners, a chance to ask a question or two of Jerry Glynn. Is the number still the same numbers we always use? Great. Okay. So if you have a question, if you or someone you love has been in a struggle in the job search or in a search for meaning or just their career is not what it should be, and we're entering 2016, what a good time to say, damn it, I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. I want to do something different. So the phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco and my special guest, Jerry Glynn, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And while we're waiting for the calls, if they come in, and this is the first live show in the new studio, so people may not be expecting the call. So if nobody calls in, don't be offended. Is there one capstone thing that you have not said yet that is you would like? We do have a good few thousand listeners to the show, and picture an arena full of people, and you want to tell them something not obvious that is nonetheless important to career success. What would you want to tell them?
I think that it has to do with the belief in yourself and being realistic about, you know, what your skills are, what your goals and objectives are, be willing to find the best way to use those. So not only thinking about it in one particular way, but then really just maintaining the persistence, the hope, the belief in yourself that you can apply these skills and you can produce something great for a company or for others.
Well, Jerry Glynn, you've produced something very great for our listeners, and I want to thank you very much for being my guest on Work with Marty Nemko.
Thank you, Marty.
Okay, now I turn to somebody I like even better than Jerry Glynn. let me introduce the topic, then I'll introduce the guest. All through the year, I get emails from listeners and from readers to my Time Magazine articles and Psychology Today articles on their problems. And what I've done in preparation for today's show is I've created a composite of them. I wanted them to be even more useful. So I've created a series of composite letters that distilled the thorniest problems that my clients and listeners and everybody else has confronted me with. And I've asked Barbara, my wife, Dr. Barbara Nemko, Napa County Superintendent of Schools, and I'll simply stop there because she hates when I brag about her. She's won a lot of awards as best superintendent. Okay, I'll stop. To read those, then I'll give you what I think my answers would be to these thorny problems. And then, Barbara, you tell me if I'm full of it or amplify or whatever. How's that?
Okay.
Go. Pick one. Anyone.
Well, I like this one. Dear Marty, back when I was in college, a professor stressed something that made a big impression on me, that the cause of obesity in the inner city is the lack of affordable fresh produce. So when I graduated, I decided to open a produce store in a tough neighborhood. Unfortunately, it hasn't gone well. First of all, sales have been poor. That's particularly frustrating because the nearby McDonald's is jammed. Further, pardon the pun, eating into my profits, is that kids are constantly stealing fruit, and worst of all, in the year I've been open, my store has been arsoned twice. The last time, apparently they climbed on the roof in the middle of the night and dropped a Molotov cocktail down the chimney into my
store.
These are all
true. This is all true. These are composites of different people, but all these things are true.
I'm wondering, well, and I remember when my dad had owned a pharmacy in the Bronx, and goes back 40 years, having people break into the store was very constant. It's a drug store. And so they would try to get drugs, and he was always getting called in the middle of the night and had to drive to the store to turn off the alarm, which was driving the neighbors crazy, and to see what the damage was.
You know, so, we, especially here in the Bay Area, tend to criticize business and business owners, but the cost to people's lives and stress, responsibility, the risk is enormous. And, you know, and I think that Jerry, for example, Jerry Glynn, was not a small business owner, but he was in charge of a major, major set of operations for a major corporation, and he lost a hell of a lot of sleep. But we don't have any sympathy. What could be less sympathetic than Charles Schwab or American Century, an executive, he's not even the human resources guy. He's a technical guy. There's no sympathy. This is a real human being who suffered a great deal because he couldn't at 5 o'clock go home. And he didn't get a dime of overtime when 5 o'clock. He was paid the same whether he was up until midnight, which he often was. But all we do is denigrate them. And yet you feel you're comfortable of going to be able to go to Schwab and invest your money and get a solid rate of return at under a 1% per year fee cost. We need to have more balance. We tend to think like, what's the word? We're lemmings. We just groupthink. And we let the mainstream media dictate what we think. And that's the media is very, very dangerous because they have profound influence on us. And yet most of the people in the media have never lived in the real world. They deliberately opted out to go from their college where they get a very narrow set of views from their professors and then go right. But then they have this thinking that they believe they know the answers and what's right and what's wrong. And then they put down some of the people who are most contributory to society. And that includes in the nonprofit sector, small business sector, government sector, and yes, even big corporations, Barbara Nemko.
I'm sorry. I was thinking that was the same thing that applies to college professors. They haven't lived in the real world.
Absolutely.
They know everything. And anyway.
Anyway, that was an aside. Please continue.
So the guy says, that all said, even though my sales are poor and have been growing only very slowly, I know I'm doing some good. And I have regular customers who really appreciate what I'm doing. Is it too early to give up?
No, it's way too early to give up. First of all, you need to ask yourself, are you running your business in a business-like way? Just because it's a lovely idea bringing produce to the poor doesn't mean it's going to work. For example, have you done traditional market research? Have you queried your customers? I'm not asking you to go hire Accenture, but have you queried your customers to see what sorts of fruits, vegetables, and ancillary products are of most interest? Like, I happen to shop at a Latino produce store. This is not to try to claim how politically correct I am, but I happen to. There's one right near here, the studio. And in addition to fruits and vegetables, they sell a lot of bread, salsas, desserts, and they sell a lot of that stuff. So what I would encourage this guy to do would be to try out some of the suggestions from the customers and keep track, keep good data on what's ending up yielding good profit per square foot of store space. That's what every grocery store does, every supermarket, and there's no reason, if you're not making money, you need to make sure you're accounting for every damn square foot, because you're paying for that 24/7. Your rent is like a taxi meter that's running 24/7. It's never closed. So you got to make sure, damn well sure, that your every square foot is yielding good profit and good quality. Next, speaking of profit margins, are you buying your produce as inexpensively as you can, consistent with quality? Are you buying too much or too little? You're in a perishable business. You have too much, you got lots of spoilage. You got too little, you're running out too fast. Is your supply chain smart? Is it the right amount of inventory? Is it the right pricing? Also, do you need to do savvier marketing? Maybe it's possible that the community, that's the current word, we don't call it neighborhood anymore, and no individuals, it's the community, it's like as in commune. Is it possible that the community needs more education on nutrition before they pass up McDonald's in favor of broccoli and salsa? If that might be true, might you want to put on a vegan cooking demonstration that focuses on foods that are popular in ethnic communities, like gazpacho or vegetable jambalaya, giving them free samples? Everybody loves free samples. Like Costco does it all the time. It brings in lots of customers. Now, that would both educate people, it would attract customers, and maybe make you more likely to be liked by the community rather than arsoned by the community. Now, maybe I'm being too idealistic, but maybe if those suggestions are not feeling right, or you try them, they still don't work, maybe the world is telling you something. That maybe a better avenue for your idealism might exist. Like, for example, many people do work that doesn't serve the poor, but then donates money or time to causes that do. Charles Schwab, for example, I'm just thinking because Jerry Glynn is here, started tens of millions of dollars foundation for kids with dyslexia and hyperactivity right here in the Bay Area and in Palo Alto or something like that. There are other people who decide that focusing on needy communities, if they're too needy, the problems are just too big to constellate. The problems are, you know, the Serenity Prayer tells us to know the difference between what we can and we can't do. And, you know, we've spent literally trillions of dollars trying to close the achievement gap among the most vulnerable among us. And maybe that's bigger than you are able to with your produce store or anything else can do. Maybe you want to take on a challenge that's a little less challenging. And still other people decide, and I think it's appropriate, to say, my obligation to the poor is fulfilled simply by paying my taxes. A lot of my taxes goes to the poor. It is redistributive. So at least that hopefully, Mr. or Ms. Produce Owner in Vulnerable Neighborhood, that at least one of those ideas may help to you. Those are my thoughts. Barbara, any reactions to that?
I would be checking out all of the successful produce stores everywhere I went to see what it is that they're doing or selling or how they're getting more customers in. I would also try to tie it to fighting obesity, because that's a really serious problem, and showing recipes that, you eat a McDonald's and that could be 600 or 800 calories, and you eat gazpacho and it's 250 calories, and it's not hard to make. So anything that would help educate. Why do people go to McDonald's? Because it's cheap and it's fast. Buying vegetables can be not terribly expensive, but it's not fast. You have to cook them. So any ways that you could prepare them that don't require a lot of time would be good for all those poor moms who get home and don't have time to start cooking up a big meal.
I haven't even given out the phone number, but we've got a call in. So I don't know if it's a call for us or for Jerry, but we're going to find out. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco, Barbara Nemco, and my special guest, Jerry Glynn, who, for those of you who are just joining us, his segment is over, but he's still here. He's a guy who's told a very inspiring story about his long-term work travails and what helped him. So welcome to the show. What is on your mind?
Well, hi. Thank you. My name is my question is for Jerry.
Great.
About I think it's a huge accomplishment to lose that much weight, and also you know in that kind of situation, a lot of people fall into a mindset that isn't very encouraging. And I'm wondering what kind of belief about yourself, Jerry, did you see change, or did you have to change, or came about as a as the impetus to make the changes that that you made? Does that question make
great
sense?
It's a wonderful question. Jerry, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the question. I think the change was really on two levels. One is realizing that it's my job to take care of my body as well as my mind. So I believe we're to do what we can to sustain ourselves, build ourselves so that we can be useful. And the second part answer is, it's about being able then to do the things that you are meant to do in this life. So if I'm not in good shape and taking care of myself, I believe I'm here for a purpose. And can I really fulfill that? Can I really do that? And there's an aspect to this that says that, you know, at the time I was thinking negatively about myself, had negative thoughts. So you have to move beyond those and realize, once again, you're here to do something to contribute, to bring your gifts, and all of us have them to bear. And so taking care of yourself is part of that responsibility, and you should feel good about that is what I thought.
You know what I find so interesting about that? It's really right. If we don't have a foundational purpose, whether it's grounded in spiritual faith or not, knowing that your role on this life is not happiness. Everybody says the pursuit of happiness is the goal, but that ends up being too shallow to motivate somebody to want to stay healthy or contribute. If you realize that our purpose in life is to contribute, or to be to our child, let's say very often people screw up their lives, and then they have a child and they realize they have an obligation for their child to be healthy and to stay around, or an obligation to their customers, or an obligation to God, or whatever it is. Is that a fair statement? Is that larger goal has got to be what drives you?
That's a fair statement. And it may not be what society tells us or what we had in mind. We may have to rethink and become clear.
So I have a different follow-up question. Once you get your mind in gear, losing 100 pounds takes more than just thinking about it. So what did you do? Did you do some like Weight Watchers kind of thing, or did you do this on your own? How did you do it?
My learning is that you can never do enough workout, do enough physical activity to outdo a bad diet. So
the first change,
the very simple change, was to work on what people call today an anti-inflammatory diet, lower refined carbohydrates, sugar, alcohol, and so on. People can research that for themselves. But there is time you need to work through it, just as the larger challenge of finding a job or your purpose. It just takes that persistence, you know, one step at a time, you know, trying to give up and not beating yourself up if you slide back, you know, on any of this. If you have a setback, you just need to be kind to yourself, refocus, and move on.
Great. Thank you very much for the call. Jerry, you know, you mentioned alcohol. You know, so many people have trouble with substance abuse, and especially as marijuana here in the Bay Area has become essentially legal, we see big posters, Feel Better, Magnolia Marijuana, or whatever the name of it is. How, any specific advice regarding demon alcohol or power, whatever it is, substance abuse that might be helpful to our listeners? What worked for you specifically regarding alcohol?
I think that alcohol, for me, and to some extent, rich foods or high carbohydrate, high sugar foods, played a role in my trying to become happy and satisfied. They became a way for distraction, or they became a way for self-congratulation or reward. And as I reformed my thinking about what it means to feel good and what we should feel good about, I began to realize that those were false feelings, false substitutes for what are now important to me.
Thanks, Jerry. I'm going to change gears again, unanticipated, but it feels organically, forgive me for saying, organically right. This kind of ties naturally into the notion of New Year's resolutions. Here we are on the 27th of, he's made changes in a life. With a caller, was talking about how to make changes in a life. we can go back to these, you know, these letters from readers and callers, because that's evergreen. If we don't get to them today, they'll be next time. But the New Year's resolution thing seems pretty pretty on target for right now. So you and I have opposite opinions. By the way, let listeners know, you listen to Work with Marty Nemco. I'm with my wife, Barbara Nemco, and we're going to do one of our little debate things here. I know you're giving me that look like you have no idea what we're going to do, but that's fine. You know, this is
I love surprises.
This is live radio. This is real. That's the one thing I can promise you. You may not like it, but it's real. In any case, I'm a believer in New Year's resolutions, even though people don't keep them often, and you're an opponent. So I've been talking a while here. So, Barbara, will you tell why you don't believe in New Year's resolutions, and I'm going to tell you why you're damn wrong.
It's not that I don't believe in them. It's just I know I can't keep them. I have a problem with the consistency of making a big life change and sticking to it. And I see no reason to set myself up for failure by declaring that I'm going to do A when I know that by the end of the first 4 days, I won't be doing A anymore. I've lived too long to expect that I'm suddenly going to make some drastic change. And fortunately, whatever I'm doing isn't hurting me so far. So I'm not in a position where I need to drastically change my life in order to feel like it's going well.
I'm not saying that the resolution needs to be to drastically change, although sometimes it is to make a drastic change. But just because we don't meet most of our goals, does it mean we have a goal-free existence where we just let serendipity determine things? To argue against resolutions is to argue against goal setting, to objective setting. It is, you know, it just seems aimless. So let's stipulate to your being right that most of us are never going to keep 70, 80, even 90%, but it doesn't cost you anything to make resolutions. So, for example, I am constitutionally, biologically intense and fast. It doesn't serve me particularly well, and it doesn't serve my clients well. I'm too fast, and I'm sure there are some listeners who can't stand my intensity as well. So am I going to guarantee that in 2016 I'm going to become laid back? No. But it is my resolution to try to dial it back where I can within reason. And to help me remember it, I'm going to write the word dial back on my palm. So it's there for me 24/7 as an ongoing free reminder. There is some upside to that. There is no downside. So why not?
Why not indeed? You have found something that is not serving you well and you're going to change it. And my resolution is I'm going to smack your palm every time you get too intense.
Okay, well, let's go back to the phone. I'll give out the phone number now. If you or someone you love has a work-related problem, maybe you're in need of a resolution or a specific tactic or some less tactical and more strategic guidance, more like what Jerry did, some kind of a change of his mindset about himself, taking himself outside of himself, whatever the hell it is. If you need some career help, we do what are called workovers on this show. So if you need one, the price is certainly right. Zero, zippo, nada. The phone number here at KALW, Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And to the phones, welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. What's on your mind? Hello.
Well, I had a suggestion. Actually, I had a couple problems last year.
Okay.
I ran into.
Okay.
And I actually ran into this book by an author named Napoleon Hill.
Oh, yeah. A very famous book. Think and Grow Rich. The name of the book is Think and Grow Rich, I believe.
Gave me some steps, and, you know, they followed him. I got them, and they worked for me.
Tell us about it.
To everybody out there.
First of all, it's very generous of you to call to share, and I appreciate it very much. Tell us what actually worked for you in improving your life.
Actually, well, it worked. He gave me some steps, and steps I never heard of before. Like, I didn't even know, like, you could take. And first of all, what helped me is, like, he said you got a vision. You got to see yourself doing it first.
Mm.
And I did that, and I wrote it down. The most important thing is to do is to write it down and read it at least.
What was your vision?
Every day.
What was your what?
I had to complete, actually, a CD I had to come out with. And I was lagging on it, and I never did it. And so I read that book, and it inspired me. And to this day, I read them, and it helps me. And I know it'll help everybody. And actually, my friends didn't believe in it, so I had them read it, and it worked for them, too. So I recommend it.
So you had the vision of writing, getting your CD done, and you wrote it down. Then what did you do?
I got up in the morning, repeated. During lunch breaks, I just read it. I repeated to myself. I see myself doing it, and it actually motivated me more, you know, to keep it on my mind. Because if you don't keep it on your mind, then you start thinking, drifting off to different stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm. You lose focus. Now, yeah. I'm hoping and praying. Oh, if I were, I'm an atheist, but if I weren't, I'd be praying that you, in fact, have made your CD. Did you make your CD?
Yes, I did, and I love it.
Now, this would be really awesome. By any chance, do you have it either? And if you don't have it now, you can get off the phone, you can call back and play us 30 seconds of it. Do you have it with you right now that you could simply press play, or do you want to call back and play 30 seconds of your CD?
I like to call back because I'm working, actually.
The show's on every Sunday. We've been on for almost over 26 years. So when you want, you've got it queued up to play your favorite 30 seconds. You call back and we'll have you play it. How's that?
Yes, thank you, sir. Appreciate
and I thank you very much. I wish you a good rest of the year.
Thank you.
Okay.
So that inspired me. I have a resolution.
Oh, I can't believe. See how open to change you are?
Oh, yeah, totally. You gave me for Christmas a revision of my favorite book that anybody who's listened to the show I probably have talked about a million times. It's called How to Work a Room by Susan Rowain. And one of the things that she identifies is that research says 93% of people self-identify as shy.
Mm.
And I am certainly in that 93%.
That sounds high to me. Go ahead.
Anyway. She identified that.
Yeah.
And her suggestion is that before you go to one of those places that you wish you didn't have to go to, the fundraiser, the Chamber of Commerce luncheon, the conference, where you're walking into a room where there may be tens to hundreds of people that you don't know and you don't know what to do, and instead of ending up at the buffet table or a wallflower hiding against the wall, she says, number one thing to do, prepare before you go. And she gives you ideas on what to prepare for. How are you going to introduce yourself to someone that you don't know? What do you have in common? And first rule is the roof over your head, which means that if you are all together in this place, whatever brought you there is what you have in common. Plus, just the logistics of the event, the way it's set up, the room, the food, the temperature, gives you a starting point for conversation. I know this, but I never look at it before I go to something, and then it's so easy to fall back into who you are and think, oh, I wish I were in here, and is it time to duck out yet? Can I leave? So I'm going to write it down, and I'm going to keep it in my wallet. And that way, before I go in, I can whip it out, get all these ideas going in my head. And then when I get there, all I have to do is go to my mental checklist. So that's my resolution. And if you don't see me with that in my wallet by next weekend, you can smack my palm.
I think that's just terrific. I'm more inclined to hug you than slap you or anything.
Well, slap me around if I need it. No, I didn't say
not,
that.
Not in my skill set. No. All right. I'll give out the phone number again. If you or someone you care about has got a work-related problem, whatever your career conundrum, I can usually be of some help, and you get two for the price of one, and the price of one is zero. So the phone number here, Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco for a workover, 415-841-4134. You know, especially if 2015 sucked for you, and you would like to have a better 2016, the phone number, 415-841-4134. All right, so before we got sidetracked on these resolutions thing, I created a series of composite letters that came from listeners to the show, as well as readers of my stuff, and well as clients that are the most thorny problems, and Barbara, I want you to, you know, you can read them, and then I'm going to try to opine on how I'd respond.
Okay. Dear Marty, I hate myself. Starting back when I was in college, I always talked about making a difference. I was going to join the Peace Corps. I was going to fight to save the environment. I'd volunteer for progressive Democrats and for legalizing marijuana. But it's been 6 years since I dropped out of college, and the only activist thing I've done is marched once in a march for transgender rights and in another one for the Black Lives Matter movement. I work part-time in a locally owned organic coffee shop, and the rest of the time I mainly just hang out with my girlfriend and play games on my phone. I can't seem to make myself do anything more than the minimum I need to get by. My parents have just cut me off, so now I'm living with four roommates in a two-bedroom apartment in a loud neighborhood. To be honest, that's what's motivating me to write to you. I'm a hypocrite. I talk big and do nothing. Like I said, I hate myself. I can't see a way out, so I'm smoking more and more. It's the only thing that gives me peace. Bumming in Berkeley. Okay. I think Jerry can answer this one.
Well, I'm going to take a shot at this one. Jerry's had enough airtime. I never met a microphone I didn't like. So, first of all, I think this guy deserves a compliment for taking an honest look at themselves. A lot of people like this are just too zoned out to not. Next, sounds like a young person, and he's way too young to say, I can't see a way out. There are many ways out if and when he decides he's going to take one. But first, we need to look at why he's become inert. I'm inferring, and I could be wrong, that before college he was doing better. Did anything happen in high school that changed him? Maybe some traumatic family experience, maybe a devastating breakup. Sometimes people keep revisiting the past, which keeps them from moving forward. Is it time for you to stop processing and force yourself to stop thinking about it so those bad memory neurons start to atrophy? You talked about your girlfriend. Sometimes a girlfriend is a very positive influence and sometimes she drags you down. Ask yourself, trust the wise man within yourself. Would the wise man within you say to spend more time with a girlfriend or less, or zero? You wrote you're smoking a lot of pot. Especially if you did a fair amount of that when you were a teenager, that really, the evidence is absolutely clear that it can, in many people, not all, results in a clear loss of motivation as well as other mental problems. There was a big study out of Northwestern that showed it creates structural changes in the brain. People, especially if they start in teenage years and smoked more than a little marijuana, it really does create changes in the brain that affect mental functioning. So I can't guarantee you, to be really honest with you, that stopping now is going to make you super motivated, but it may help. It's just something to think about. Now, you said you dropped out of college and now you're only 6 years later, you're having only a part-time job at a coffee shop. You're going to have a hard time landing a job in the open market. Is there any chance your parents might open a career door for you? It sounds like maybe they're doing okay financially because they agreed to keep supporting you for a long time after you dropped out. So I'm inferring, again, I'm just guessing, that they may be able to hire you or maybe have a connection that does. I'm also inferring that your relationship with them is strained. It doesn't take a genius to infer that. So before asking them to go to bat for you, which would maybe risk their reputation, if they're referring you to their buddy and you turn out to be this laid-back, non-active pothead, you know, they could pay a big price for that. So you need to be pretty convincing that you're really ready and able to change. So you got to make a really strong case. Now, your letter says you believe in a wide range of liberal causes. So to put something on your resume, should you be volunteering at a liberal nonprofit? That's maybe, because I know you're not super motivated right now, maybe something that's nearby where you live. It may not be the cause you're most into, but we got to get you out of this kind of inertia. Objects at rest tend to stay at rest. Objects in motion tend to stay in motion. And if you do a good job at a volunteer, maybe, a lot of times, unfortunately, most volunteer positions do not get converted to paid positions, but maybe it will, or at least you've got something on your resume, which you can then go to other nonprofits. And maybe the last thing is this. A lot of people who are struggling as badly as you are can't do this on their own. They need to join some group. There's all kinds of group support, especially in the Bay Area. Maybe from a church. There are these ministries that are job search support group ministries. Maybe it's a job search support group. I know there's one at the YMCA. I know that there are some that are called Employment Unlimited that's put out by the EDD, the State Unemployment Department. So maybe you need to do that. And finally, again, to end on a positive note, I do think that a person like you, unlike a lot of others, deserves at least a small pat on the back for taking a look at yourself. And you seem bright enough and young enough that there certainly is reason for hope. Those are my thoughts. Barbara Nemko, what are your reactions?
I think that you need to set a definite goal that you're going to be doing something within the next 2 weeks because the lack of motivation is very enervating. The more you sit around, the worse it's going to get. And so I agree with you. It may have to be a volunteer position, but you need to get yourself off your rear end and into the real world. preferably, if you can have a job part-time at a coffee shop, maybe you can get two part-time jobs in two coffee shops while you're looking, but at least bringing in some money, because it's sure no fun to be living in a loud place with four roommates.
It is true that the busier you are, the more you feel you can do. They say when you want something done, ask a busy person. You tend to get so busy, you're not as wrapped up in yourself. You are more, if you're busy doing all those things, and it tends to feed on itself. And then you have at least some, if you're doing a lot of different things, at least one of them you'll do well, and that's going to make you feel better about yourself, Barbara.
Yeah, I think the fact that you have so much time on your hands, you're sitting around and all you're doing is beating yourself up, which reduces your confidence and makes you less likely to be out there doing something. Plus, you're in a coffee shop. So you're seeing and meeting different people all the time. You don't know which of those people you could impress that could lead to some kind of a job. So you ought to be the best server in that organic coffee shop that they have ever seen. You need to be the most pleasant, the most attentive, the most excellent server. And a lot of people in coffee shops are regulars, so you get to know them, and maybe you find out what they do, talk to them, and maybe one of them is doing something that interests you.
I worry he's so inert now that if we put that high a bar, that could be just a spearing of say, crap, I can't do any of this, and he's going to just light up another joint. So sure, it would be great if you can do that, but I'm not convinced that that's necessarily the answer. I need him to get small wins. Simply getting out of the house and showing up is a win for him. And then little by little, maybe it'll build momentum. Again, like that physics example, in order for an object to be in motion, it happens slowly. So just a thought. And another thought is, dear listeners, if you or someone you love has got a work-related problem, this is a good time to call, because I think this is the first show in which the KELW is taking calls on, as we are in these new temporary facilities that we've had to do, so you're probably not expecting to. So the lines are usually full, and they're open now. So this is a great time to call. If you've ever thought about, I think I want to hear what Marty and Barbara have to say about my work problem, this is a great time to do it. The phone number here, Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco, KELW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134.
I think everybody's too busy writing down their resolutions right now. But we'd love to hear them. So yeah. After you write them, call us.
You got another composite letter from a troubled listener or a reader of my stuff?
No, I do. Okay. Dear Marty, I have a great government job, good pay, great job security, and I like the work. There's only one problem. One of my three coworkers does everything possible to make my life miserable. Worse, she's smart enough to do it in ways that can't get her into trouble. Here are the sorts of things she's done. She has access to all sorts of information that, while not required to give me, could make my work easier. In meetings, she never supports what I say. Worst of all, she managed to convince our boss to have her check my written work. I am a little error prone. I'm more of a big picture person. She finds even tiny things, small spelling mistakes, punctuation errors, even using a hyphen instead of a dash. What's the difference between a hyphen and a dash?
A hyphen is smaller. It's less wide.
Excuse me.
It's very
okay.
So it really is trivial. Yep.
And when a document of mine includes a couple of bigger weaknesses, she sends the original and corrected version to the boss. One time she wrote a formal letter to the boss saying, "It takes me so long to correct Mary's work. Is this really a good use of our work group's limited resources? Might you want to replace her?" The boss said no, but I'm constantly having to deal with a smart coworker whose mission in life is to play gotcha with me. I've applied for many transfer positions but haven't gotten any. I believe that my nemesis's games have left my boss with a bad enough opinion of me that she won't recommend me. I have to stick it out for 5 more years till I can retire. How can I make things more livable? I would say, first thing, why would you hand in your work if you know it's error-prone without having somebody else who's a friend check it first? There's absolutely no excuse for handing in things with spelling and typos and grammatical errors when all you need to do is run it by somebody else. In the same way that this nemesis is doing it, a friend can do it for you, and then when you hand in stuff, you're handing in the right stuff.
I think it's a useful tactic. I always like to present another side. Certainly, if it's big errors is one thing, but this obsession with trivia, again, maybe the theme of this entire show is thinking cosmically, thinking the big picture. How damn important is it if there is a one spelling error in there, or is a hyphen instead of a dash? Are we focusing on the wrong things? But my reaction is quite different, actually, in terms of, you know, rather than tactically trying to fix her. I found it interesting that this writer did not say that this evil boss played gotcha with the other workers, only with her. So I'd be asking her, why do you think she's that way with you? Is it possible that she's not playing gotcha, which externalizes your responsibility, but she is frustrated with listening to your bad ideas at meetings and having to spend a lot of time fixing your work? So maybe you do need to be more cautious. Not everybody's a brilliant idea person. Maybe you need to listen more and present fewer ideas, or perhaps with less hubris, with less certainty. And similarly, as Barbara, you're right. Whether it be an idea that she's thinking about bringing up in a meeting, maybe she wants to run it by a trusted friend. If it is a draft of something, well, of course, a little hyphen or a dash or one spelling is no big deal. But if the flow of the email or the letter that she's writing is disjointed, which is usually the larger problem, which I'm inferring that she's got some logical issue, that is, she's not this clear thinker who's just got a little typo in there here or there. So she needs to ask herself, number one, do I need to get somebody to really edit my work for more substantive reasons? Or that is one of the hardest things to improve of all, which is your thinking ability. Writing is a proxy for thinking. If you're just not everybody is equally good at thinking, just as not everybody is good at basketball. So do you need to, you know, have a, quote, come to Jesus meeting? I'm doing this, you know, the whole, and ask yourself, am I a victim of the Peter principle? I've risen to my level of incompetence. I shouldn't be drafting memos. I should be doing what is my particular strength. So she needs to take a look inward as well, and maybe try to improve, maybe not give up right away. Maybe take a course in critical thinking, or a course in writing that doesn't focus on grammar but focuses more on the logic of the writing, and see if it helps. And if not, then accept your weaknesses. And then now, let's assume, though, that that's not right. Let's not put it all on this person. Maybe the boss, this coworker Mary, has an unfair vendetta. Does she have a reason? Is she jealous of your looks? There's story after story about how women, for example, do compete about looks. They're mean to other women because they're jealous of their looks. Is racism, you know, here in the Bay Area, we run to race, gender, sexual orientation, and you know, as the reason why things are bad. Maybe it's true in this case. Maybe you're of a particular ethnicity or sexual orientation. She doesn't like you. So maybe somebody have a personality. Maybe she's laid back and you're more assertive. There's something that may be wrong. If you think that it's one of these non-rational reasons why she does actually have a vendetta, maybe it's worth trying to heal your relationship, maybe by taking her out to lunch. You could say something like, well, you and I haven't been the best of friends, so I'm wondering if maybe we could see if we could press reset so we both end up being happier. And in that spirit, would you allow me to take you out to lunch? That could work, might not, no downside. And I would recommend that in that first lunch, you don't go right to the core of the blaming or the this or that, but you keep it real small. Follow that Susan Rowain book you were talking about. Small talk is underrated. It's a way for people to calm down, feel more comfortable, find common ground, whether it's about pop culture or the Golden State Warriors or fashion or whatever. It enables you to say, okay, this is a human being, not some monster. And so I got to tell you, the final thing is, you know, you say you've got to stick it out 5 more years until retirement. 5 years is an awful long time. Especially as you're toward the end of your work life, to spend your last 5 years tortured under the microscope of this person is not acceptable. So I hope somewhere amid all of these ideas, there's something that Barbara or I just mentioned that might give you some more hope than having to stick out 5 years.
And I will also, I like your idea of taking her out to lunch and saying, is there a way to press reset? But I would express any feelings that I have in terms of I statements. I feel this way, I feel that way, and try to avoid the blaming statements, because the minute you say something that sounds blaming or attacking, she's going to get defensive and you're going to be worse off than you were before.
Let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. It is your turn on the air. What's on your mind? Hello?
Yes?
Yes. Thank you for your patience and waiting to get on the air.
Hi. I'm a former attorney. I run a contract, I have a direct hire, basically, attorney placement service. Mm-hmm. We've just made a huge commission But it took 3 years. I mean, it's an enormous commission.
Wow.
It took forever.
For people who don't know some of these terms about direct hire, that means that there is some, probably some law firm or some in-house company that wanted a lawyer and they used you kind of as a headhunter. Was it for more than one position that you earned this, or was it one
group,
very highly paid person?
A massive group from one Am Law 100 law firm to another.
Right.
My question concerns, first of all, the person working for me quit to go off and compete against me, mm-hmm. which I have no control over. I'm not happy, but I need to find a replacement.
Okay.
I need to decide whether to go back into contract placement, which I was doing before. Contract placement I got out of basically because Craigslist kind of killed it.
Sure. All those 10 part-time project jobs are basically filled without headhunters. It's only the, real true headhunting where you're stealing from one firm to another. If you're Morrison & Foerster and you are Pillsbury, you can't, it would be unseemly for you as, Pillsbury to go to try to raid the mofo. So you go and you hire the third party to do the dirty work for you. Is that a fair summary?
Well, you don't get hired. You're on contingency, basically. You've approached them, but it's pretty easy to approach one firm with another group because the group is making huge amounts of billings. So you're really moving a business, a profit center, to the other law firm, and they're going to only pay them a third in salary, a third in overhead, and the other third is going to be the acquiring law firm's profit forever. So they pay you for 1 year, but then they get that profit for a long time.
Okay, I'm going to interrupt you because we're almost out of time on the show. Tell me the...
Okay, I wanted to ask you what your advice is to finding new recruiters, how to go about it, should it be commission only, and secondly, should I get into these other segments like contract or something that pays more quickly
rather than waiting
years for the big hit?
If you need the money, yes, but if you don't, you always want to compete in an arena that is less crowded. You now have a huge win on your own. We are all lemmings. So if you are able to take a big top law firm and do this major move, there's a whole major book of business from one firm to the other. Most headhunters can't do that. So what I would encourage you to do is get this is a sales job, so you want to get a really good salesperson, and you want that person to, you can't expect them to be on 100% commission starting out, because it takes time to close that first deal. You're going to want a quality person. You got to give them a base that's a disappearing base that starts out at a good amount of money so they can pay their bills and disappears over 6 months or a year, so that they've had time to get clients. And it's not important that the person necessarily be a master lawyer. It needs to be a master, high-end, sophisticated salesperson who can sell to C-level customers, people who are sophisticated enough in style so they could talk to a Jerry Glynn who's at a vice presidential level and be impressive. And your best thing to do is to not place an ad, but to think of all the people you've ever met in the law and without who have that kind of credibility and use them. That's all the time we've got, so I've got to say goodbye to you. I want to give by. We have just a few seconds. Nothing to say? Okay.
Nope.
Then I want to thank Barbara Nemco for being my co-conspirator here on the show, Jerry Glynn for being candid and wonderful, but frankly, most of all, Phil Hartman and Debbie Kennedy. We've moved into this new series. This is the first show that we're able to put have callers. You are all perfect. So I'm in awe of you and deeply appreciative on behalf of all the listeners. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. I will do more workovers, and I will talk with Jeff Hyman, who is a consultant to employers. He's a brilliant guy on how to hire and how you can get hired when the competition is fierce. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemco for Barbara Nemco, reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't, and please have a wonderful rest of the year, savoring the simple pleasures.
The archives of Dr. Marty Nemco's articles, information on his 8 books, including his new book, The Best of Marty Nemco, plus how you can consult privately with Marty, go to martynemco.com. That's martynemko.com. And you can join Marty again next Sunday morning at 11 for Work with Marty Nemco here on 91.7 KALW San Francisco.